Yeah, I just saw like a tweet that has like the shot map, and it looks like it looks like a cat's cradle on Liverpool's side. And then there are three shots on Everton's side. Hello and welcome to the Soft Tattooed Millionaires podcast, the only podcast that, actually, let's do that again. I don't know what to say. No, let's just keep going. I don't know what we are exceptional in. What do you think we're exceptional in as a podcast?
I was thinking today about how many slippers I own and how that surprised me.
Yeah. What is your slipper strategy? I will tell you, mine is I have a pair of old like leather shoes, like leather slip-ons I used to wear. They're just gotten so kind of like faded, and the sole's all so broken up I can't wear them in public anymore, but they make great house shoes.
Yeah. I have actual slippers. I even have a preferred brand of slippers called Snoozies. And I know. And okay. The ones I'm wearing right now have a goalie on the left foot and a soccer player dribbling a ball on the right foot.
Nice. So,
yeah, depending on how I'm feeling in the day, if I'm feeling more left-footed, I'll put the striker on that foot and the goalie on my right foot. But usually this is my preferred configuration.
If Snoozies were to be worn by one player on the U.S. men's national team, what player would it be?
I'm trying to think of which player does the least amount of running.
Yeah, so I was thinking, who is the snooziest?
Yeah, I don't know. I would say like Michael Bradley in 5 years. Probably won't be doing a whole lot of running.
Yeah, I agree.
But
he's getting it all in. And he put in quite a good performance. We'll get to that later on. But let's start off with kind of our sweet spot, tattoos. Yes.
We need to have a jingle for soft tattoos.
Yeah.
Soft tattoos.
You sent me some pictures of a shirtless Kyle Beckerman. I'll let you introduce this. Paint us a word picture.
Paint you a word picture.
Yes.
Kyle Beckerman is famous for being a white guy with dreads, and he has exactly the kind of tattoos that you would imagine he would have. The cultural appropriate.
True or false? Do his tattoos also have dreadlocks?
True.
True.
The cultural appropriation that is on his head continues throughout his entire body. So he has sort of this Pacific Northwestern pattern over like
totem pole, kind of like yes, Native exactly. American decoration all over the place.
Exactly. In between his shoulder blades is what I think is the worst, which is this sort of smirking lion that also has dreadlocks.
Yeah, it looks like adult Simba has dreadlocks.
Yes, it is really, really bad.
Oh, it's terrible.
Yeah, and then, you know, he also has the head of a Native American on his right arm. And I just think that white people should not... We should have learned by now not to get tattoos of Native Americans.
I tried to double-check just to make sure Kyle Beckerman was not actually Native, but no evidence to find that, so I'm just going to assume he's a white guy appropriating Native American stuff. Poor form on the tattoos.
Soft tattoos.
Moving on, let's talk about the MLS Cup Final, which happened yesterday. What are your thoughts on that? We both saw Michael Bradley just have a beast of a performance, which was pretty bittersweet for me. And I can't sort of like watch that game and sort of not just be filled with complicated emotions. But I'll let you say how you felt about the game.
Oh, yeah. I probably felt the same that most people felt watching it. When we put up a poll on Twitter asking which U.S. men's national team players are you less pissed off at, those on Toronto or those on Seattle, 100% of the votes were for Seattle. So I tried to calm myself and just think it's not any two players' fault that the U.S. men's national team failed to qualify. Josie and Michael have been getting a lot of flack. But I definitely have turned against them and sort of I'm not quite sure that I'm just not being hard on them.
Yeah, me neither. I think that I'm just falling in line with everybody else's anger, or what it is that really pisses me off about them. Because, you know, like in the Trinidad and Tobago game, Bradley was just hung out to dry in the midfield. He was the only defensive midfielder. He had like six guys to cover. He wasn't able to close down that TNT player who hit that weird long range volley shot that looped over Howard and in for the first goal. You know, so he was given an impossible task in that particular game. And of course, like, he came through big and scored that goal in the 1-1 draw in Azteca. Mm-hmm. So this last cycle, maybe he wasn't his best self, but he also had, you know, like an impossible task defensively in the last game, and put in a, you know, made and scored the most memorable goal, I think, in that in the whole qualifying cycle.
Yeah, I also think that Jozy Altidore, there's a group of people that are just upset with him for never being quite as good as we had hoped.
Yeah.
So, and I still think that there are people who are disappointed about that, and that turns into anger, perhaps. If he would have become the player we thought he was going to, we wouldn't have had a problem in qualifying. But that line of logic doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. But
yeah, so let's and maybe that's like exactly. It's hard to watch Jozy and not kind of think about that, because you watch this game, and he scores Toronto's first goal, which is an awesome goal by him, right? It's like pure power and strength, getting on a run, counterattack, fires it in, beautiful, right? But then you watch him in the game and you're like, yeah, he's kind of like, he's still not dominating or taking control. He seems in some ways kind of like Man United and Everton have had with Romelu Lukaku to a certain extent, where you sort of like see this sort of talent and all this kind of stuff, but then you also see a player who drifts in and out of games. And you're not sure if, like, because the player flashes such good qualities at times, if that's what makes you frustrated with him, because you can see how good he would be if you put it all together. And regardless of how Altidore's like progressed as a player, you still see on the field kind of like every game how he just doesn't seem to quite put it together as much as he would like, or given his skill set.
Hold on, my Shelly is whining at me.
Let's just keep this awkward you petting your dog thing in the podcast. Okay, we're back at it after a brief dog maintenance break. And if Jack's voice sounds different, it's because he's back in the closet hiding from his dog.
We should also say that Lukaku and Jozy are nowhere near on the same level. Lukaku is 10 times the player that Jozy is, at least, but similar styles of play.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. And as I was saying, that it's a weird sort of thing where you can get frustrated with the athlete, even though they are one of the best players on their team. And you sort of like have to take a step back and be like, wait a second, why am I frustrated with him? Because he's not better, but still very good. So, yes.
So do you think that the anger that we feel for Jozy and Michael Bradley is also just kind of American entitlement, that we want our best players to also be the best in the world, but we don't have that yet?
And maybe that's like the thing that too frustrates me watching the MLS Cup. And I have no patience for, you know, shitting on the MLS as terms of like shitting on its quality of player and game and all that kind of stuff. That's boring to me. But watching the game, I think you see it, and then you see like part of my brain is thinking from a national team perspective, part of my brain is thinking like, wait, if Bradley can boss the midfield like this in MLS, in the finals in MLS, like, why isn't he really playing like this kind of defense at a national team level?
Yeah.
And maybe that's also the hazard of a national team, where players don't get to play together as much. They're not as well organized potentially. You know, like the team isn't designed to go out and acquire these certain pieces. And obviously Toronto is also a great, great team, and they must work together in a certain way. But still, it's frustrating to watch and to see these players score, or in Bradley's case, just absolutely dominate a midfield and feel like you miss out on that on a national team level. And I'm not sure if it's because of the, like, literally if MLS isn't preparing these players to play at a CONCACAF level, does that even make sense?
Yeah. It also it doesn't make sense because
it seems like they should be able to yeah. boss around CONCACAF teams.
Well, the other players that are in CONCACAF and the MLS seem to not have any problems playing at a CONCACAF level. So clearly, yeah. clearly there's something wrong with the coaching. Clearly there's something wrong with the USSF and not the players. But you know, I don't know. I mean, we should get back to the game itself. It just I was pretty bored, and I felt really shitty about being bored because this was the Super Bowl of the MLS.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it was also one of those games where, like, depending on how it plays out, I feel like the narrative of the game could like make the whole 90 minutes seem much more dramatic. Like the fact that Stephen Fry saved a bunch of goals and that was like a boring part. He looked great, but that was like a boring part of the first 45 minutes. Like maybe then if it goes to like penalty kicks at the end of the game, that makes the whole game, it makes it come into a sort of narrative focus where you see like, wow, he really was the star of this game or something like that. But I agree. It's sort of, it was one of those games where it wasn't super exciting. And then, when Josie scores that goal, it turns kind of desperate, for Seattle. And then you sort of get this kind of like, you just get this game that worked. It didn't quite deliver.
Yeah. There was no twists and turns. It was just sort of, all one way
traffic. Yeah, a lot of that was honestly just like Seattle didn't look very good.
No, they looked tired.
They looked tired. And Toronto clearly like crowded the midfield. And like Seattle just couldn't solve that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, not the best final. But it made me realize that is MLS the only sport that can – where the season can begin and end with snow?
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, because we both watched that Minnesota-Atlanta
game. One of the best games I've seen.
Absolutely.
Like from a visual, from a visual standpoint, just incredible. Oh,
so good.
So entertaining.
Yeah. I would love to see something like that happen where the season actually kind of goes all the way around, snow to snow. Yeah. That'd be beautiful.
Yeah, I also just wonder how good it is for the league if the two most hated players on the men's national team win the MLS Cup.
Yeah, and then Josie says, like, Toronto is the best city in the world.
So who are we going all in on next year?
What do you mean? Just, which MLS team?
Yeah, like, for emotional reasons, nothing tactical, nothing anything else. Who do we want to see win?
I mean, I could never root for, like, a New York team, but if Tyler Adams is playing, I would definitely be interested in watching that. Similarly, if Andrew Carlton's playing for Atlanta, that ups my interest in Atlanta even more.
Yeah.
Some of these guys, and that's going to kind of roll into another topic I had, which is that I watched the U.S. youth national team under 17 Nike friendlies with a couple guys who have contracts with MLS clubs, George Bello and Giuliano Buzio, who both looked pretty good in that game. That was a 1-1. The game I watched was the 1-1 tie against Brazil. And the U.S., the young Yanks, or whatever they're called.
Baby Yanks?
Baby Yanks, yes, the Baby Yanks. Didn't have a good series of friendlies before that, but they put in a respectable performance against Brazil. And Bello and Buzio looked pretty good.
So you're into whatever team plays the youngest Americans.
Yeah, and I think that's absolutely. Whichever team plays the youngest Americans, whichever team plays
the highest amount of baby eggs.
Yeah, plays where I feel like, and in general, that's my approach to watching a lot of sports is I want to just feel like something is developing and growing long term. And so I want to see that Atlanta has a plan for Andrew Carlton, that he's got a path there, or that his development is going someplace there, or Tyler Adams if he ends up sticking around MLS, same sort of thing. So those are definitely the teams that I'm keeping my eye on to watch. I'm also just generally sort of interested in Minnesota United, to see if they can, they started off so poorly this season, and then actually really got their shit together and played a lot better. And so it would be fun to watch, to see if they can put something together.
The team that I'm going to go all in on, and not just because Luchi Gonzalez did an interview, is FC Dallas, just because their academy system has always been light years ahead of everybody else. The league is starting to catch up, but that is a team that's totally committed to youth, and I really enjoyed talking to Luchi Gonzalez. And yep, that's it. FC Dallas all the way.
That sounds good.
I also hope that Tyler Adams isn't in the league next year. There's all these rumors that
their European clubs looking at him, particularly RB Leipzig. So I hope for his sake as a player developing that he is not in the MLS next year. But I love Sasha Kljestan. So I will also be watching the Red Bulls with some degree of curiosity and hope.
Speaking of not in the MLS, one interesting another developmental route potentially is guys like Jonathan Gonzalez going to Liga MX. And we both watched a bit of or I definitely watched the first leg of the final in Liga MX. And Jonathan Gonzalez has been sort of a very solid contributor to Monterrey. Not particularly flashy, but a solid contributor. And so I'm wondering about that as another model. Like, if it's too much for guys to move to Europe and have to fight for playing time, if some kids can go to Liga MX and try to get more playing time.
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, Jonathan Gonzalez is from...
He's from
California. Was it Santa Rosa?
He's from California, but I think he moved to Mexico when he was like 14, 15 or something like that. So obviously he's got this kind of dual citizenship or dual allegiance, and obviously he's bilingual. So so that's a lot easier for him to make that move. But
yeah, when we talk about the fragility of American players, it seems like the term that nobody uses is homesickness.
Yeah.
When people talk about how difficult it is to go abroad, well, I can go to Monterrey in 6 hours from Austin. I can drive, and it's a lot easier to get in a car and drive 6 hours, or just take a 2-hour flight to Monterrey, or I think it's like a 2.5-hour flight to Guadalajara from Austin.
Mm.
That's a lot easier than, you know, say an 8 to 10 hour flight from, you know, Frankfurt. But yeah, also it seems strange, but it seems culturally so much farther away for young white players in America than
definitely
than Europe. Yeah,
and that may speak volumes too about the sort of class issues with soccer development. You know,
mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm fascinated by this because two of the top 10 markets for soccer in the United States are Brownsville and El Paso.
Yeah,
border towns.
Yeah, absolutely, man. It's crazy. I can't remember if we've talked about this on the podcast before, but every week when the numbers come out about what soccer games were most watched in the in America, it's Liga MX. If there's a big game, it's like 50% higher than whatever Premier League game. It's crazy.
That's crazy.
If there's a Clásico, it's like boom. It just dominates the media market, and people are oblivious to that.
Yeah, I was thinking about this last night because the reason why we didn't do a podcast early in the week is because I've been working every night at the bar. So last night after the game, you know, I have a bunch of regulars now, and especially the regulars I have that know I like soccer will always ask me, you know, what are you watching this weekend? How's your team doing? And I ask them how their team's doing. But this weekend I asked everyone, well, did you watch the game earlier? And nobody knew what I was talking about. So I have an Arsenal fan regular. He says, oh, no, I play tomorrow. And then I have this Man United fan. So you watched the game today. Oh, no. Like, you know, I'll watch tomorrow, though. It's not till tomorrow. And I was just thinking about how bizarre it is that these sort of diehard, in quotation marks, fans of soccer had no idea that the MLS Cup had just happened, you know, 2 hours earlier.
Yeah.
One guy even said, oh, yeah, like when I told him, I was like, oh, the MLS Cup was on. He said, oh, yeah, well, I hope Vancouver does well.
Nice.
Yeah, I know. I felt terrible. And I just thought about, like, how absolutely fucking insane it is that, like, the soccer market in America, for the American soccer team, isn't even tapped into the market for soccer in America, if that makes sense, if you can understand what I'm trying to say.
Absolutely. It is such a bizarre ecosystem, too, when you think about NBC owns the Premier League, Fox owns Bundesliga, and now that more Americans are playing in the Bundesliga, you know, there's more games and more attention on those games. But then you have MLS, which is on ESPN, right?
Yeah.
ESPN, and then I think ESPN also covers the men's national team, right? And that's all part of the Soccer United Marketing partnership.
Yeah.
And then you have Liga MX, which like maybe on ESPN Deportes occasionally, but is also just on like Univision, right?
Yeah.
And so you get these like really fractured soccer media markets, and maybe that's the way it is everywhere because soccer is such an international game. But you get the idea that like it's like everywhere it's growing a little bit instead of like growing a lot in one place.
Well, Univision did better coverage for the MLS Cup than ESPN. Their pregame started an hour earlier, and it was actually really good. They had interviews with all these different players. They had little filmed segments about, you know, certain players. And when I turned on ESPN, they were playing Indiana versus Louisville. who gives a shit?
Yeah.
This is the last game of the season. So there was a pregame on ESPN, but it had lower production value than Univision. It was less in-depth, so.
I have to say, though, I did like on MLSsoccer.com, they had pregame stuff, like a lot of it, and they had a lot of videos that were well-made, but it was like Dax McCarty hanging out with other players talking about Toronto's tactics and Seattle's tactics on like a whiteboard, basically. And I believe Dax was wearing like a sweater, a Christmas sweater. So it was... I just said maybe it's still some of MLS coverage still does feel like Wayne's World. Yeah. but I dug it, definitely.
Oh my god. I was about to call Dax McCarty Mickey Rooney in my head, but Dax McCarty in like a Wayne hat would be so good.
Definitely.
Well, surrounding the MLS Cup, seemed like Don Garber was more in the media than usual. It seems like he was doing an interview with anybody and everybody. And in one interview, I heard him say he was talking about Pro Rel and how it doesn't make sense. And the example he gave was the LA Galaxy spent a lot of money, but given their performance in the season, they would have been relegated and Dos Santos would have been playing in Cincinnati. And the only thing I could think of was, oh my god, that would be awesome. like that would be so incredible. Like, I don't give a fuck about the Galaxy. Also, you don't really spend a lot of, I mean, when you compare what other leagues spend.
Yep.
The Galaxy spent something like $4.5 million in the offseason. That might be a lot of money to the MLS, but that's not comparable to any other professional league.
Yeah.
Of high standing.
I mean, what if you were to spend $4.5 million in the Premier League, what could you get?
I don't know, like one of Arsene Wenger's suits. I don't know.
Tony Pulis's white shoes.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I mean, yeah, you get. I don't know who you get. That's interesting. We should have thought this out.
I mean, no, it's the kind of thing where you could get, like, if you're like a lower table team, you could get a defender who might play for some fight for some minutes, but like not someone, or like a really speculative young player. You know,
yeah,
that kind of thing. So yeah, like, and that's total what they spend in the off season. MLS has upped the discretionary funds that teams are allowed to spend, and so like over their cap, if I understand it correctly, the economics of the sports stuff always confuses me. But they've upped that going into next year, which will be good. Teams will have some extra money to play around with, and I think Don Garber's comments about that were, you know, I saw something about making MLS more competitive with Liga MX to attract top talent. But it still feels a little bit like training wheels. And it's weird that the economics are phrased that way, where basically it's like, hey, we're going to just slowly increase the amount of money you can spend to try to get us closer to this. But assuming that, like, or presuming that if they were to take off that limit, then all kinds of things would happen that would be weird. Like maybe, or like that would in some ways hurt the league. It doesn't make any sense. I mean, there's an issue of parity, but honestly, like spending more money on players, you know, and making a more competitive environment, yeah, that's good.
Yeah. Right? Yes. I feel like the MLS only makes decisions out of fear, and they should have stopped making decisions out of fear and started making decisions for growth a long time ago. And I don't buy the shit that Don Garber spits. I don't buy that the MLS is even growing. I read a couple of different articles over this past week. One of them written by the guy who wrote Soccernomics. I forget his name, but really good guy. And basically they're saying, like, you know, Forbes reports that the MLS is making money, but that's probably total bullshit. And here are the reasons why. And there's this great article on Deadspin from a few months back, just called is MLS a Ponzi scheme, where they're using the buy-in fee for new clubs to leverage against their losses. So
interesting.
Yes.
So exactly. Basically, they're betting against against the future in a sense, where they just keep being like, "Oh yeah, we'll just keep adding teams, and assuming that it's going to grow to a certain extent."
But the league can't grow if the product it offers is inferior, right? And that product is inferior because of the restrictions they place on trading players and sort of the economic restrictions. So
let me transition to an even more uplifting topic, and that's the topic of Kathy Carter and Soccer United marketing. And in that interview, Grant Wall asked her point blank, "Hey, is there a conflict of interest if you or someone else has equity in Soccer United Marketing, the conglomerate for profit that represents MLS and the U.S. men's national team and U.S. national teams in their relationship with media markets, and then you suddenly take over this position as president of U.S. Soccer?" And what he's saying is basically like, what he's implying about this is that if you have a vested interest in growing MLS, and one way to do so is to continue to tie media negotiations to the negotiations with the U.S. national teams, which is what Soccer United Marketing does, then you're potentially your position on that is compromised to some certain extent, or you have a conflict of interest where you might want to keep that partnership going, even if it doesn't make as much sense. And you have a vested interest in using the value of the U.S. national teams to continue to raise the value of MLS. And that was a pretty brutal question, which he completely avoided and basically said that, like, "Oh, Soccer United Marketing is just about raising the profile of all soccer, and we invest all profits back into the soccer community." And but as I pointed out before, the soccer media landscape is so fractured that it's so bizarre that you know, the U.S. national team tied to MLS makes, you know, no sense. Mm-hmm. And when you have like four or five different leagues trying to compete with other different media markets, you know, like, there's not necessarily a reason why the U.S. national team should tie their media and their marketing to one of those leagues.
The SUM is really confusing. It's
yes.
In the Venn diagram of MLS, United States Soccer Federation, and SUM, it's unclear what the overlap is, and that is disturbing to me. Clearly it's a conflict of interest, because when SUM was bidding for something like the Gold Cup or something like that, CONCACAF would not allow Sunil Gulati to vote on it because he's also on the board of SUM.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, U.S. soccer is dirty and weird.
Yeah, it really is dirty and weird. And I don't know why we think it's not. Perhaps because the MLS is just so underwhelming. We just assume that if it were corrupt, we would have more interesting games like the Italians or something.
That's true. Man, maybe that's what MLS needs. Some Italian corruption.
We just need Berlusconi to come over and start running the MLS. And doesn't Don Garber call himself the Soccer Don?
Yes, that is his Twitter handle.
Oh, what a gross man. He's so out of touch.
Yeah, I know.
He's the least, if he's a criminal, he's the least interesting criminal I could imagine.
Ah, man. All right, let's say something optimistic.
I'm very excited about Remy Garden, Montreal. I've edited this out of like the last three podcasts we've done. But I know he had a horrible time at Aston Villa, but when he was in Lyon, they called him Remy Guardiola. So I'm excited about Remy Guard coming to Montreal.
Yes, Remy Guardiola. Okay. I'm excited about – I watched the U.S. The women's under-20 game in game one, the Nike friendlies. And I turned it off after the eighth goal. It was unbelievable. The U.S. like stomped Finland. I think I turned it off when it was like 7-1 or 8-1. I forget. Ended up being 10-1, but really like a lot of fun playing and just like it was fun to watch. There was a player for the women's team, Kuhlman, who was just beasting all over the place, and it's great to see sometimes what fun soccer looks like.
Yeah, any hope or joy I have in soccer is really can only be attributed to the United States women's national team.
Absolutely.
Thanks, guys. Thank you so much.
Yep. Yeah, sans hope solo.
Okay.
All right, thanks for listening to this week's Soft Tattooed Millionaires podcast, the only podcast with this outro music.